Dem Bosch, I'm Sarah Glynn for Media News, and this is my weekly news review for Saturday, the 6th of January. Dermatash to state prosecutor, you are a colonialist, we are working on living together. 2 days after the death of his father, who he'd not been able to see since May, Selahattin Dermatash continued his defence in the Kobani case from behind prison walls. Dermatash is former co-chair of the People's Democratic Party, the HDP, now the Dem Party, and his speech has resonated with all those struggling to defend Kurdish rights. This is a defence in the tradition of Scottish socialist John McLean, who famously told the court at his trial for sedition in 1918, "I'm not here then as the accused, I'm here as the accuser of capitalism, dripping with blood from head to foot." The target of Dermatash's accusation is colonialism, specifically Turkish colonialism over Kurdistan. He criticises not only the colonialists of the current government, but the whole colonial system that has ensured the collapse of politics in Turkey. This week's statement is much more than a defence against specific charges. It lays out the case for Kurdish liberatory politics. Erfan Aktan emphasised the power of his words in Arti Gercek. Quote, "Dermatash is judging not only the AKP and its fascism, but also the Turkist ideology that has kept the Kurds under control for 100 years, revealing the shallowness of this ideology and the costs it creates. Moreover, he defends the legitimacy of the resistance against this ideology, not from below or even from eye level, but from a bird's eye view, like a philosopher. Dermatash, as a Kurdish politician, is defending not himself or the Dem Party to which he belongs, but the entire Kurdish people divided into four parts by separatist states in the state court." End quote. The very existence of the Kobani case is itself an illustration that something is rotten in the state of Turkey. The defendants are leading members of the HDP, who called on people to protest against the siege of the city of Kobani by ISIS in 2014 and against the inaction of Turkish forces in the face of this ISIS attack. Dermatash and Figen Yüksekdağ, the HDP's former co-chairs, together with 106 others, are being held responsible for the deaths that occurred when those protests were attacked by the security forces and by reactionary counter-protesters. They are accused of multiple homicides and of disrupting the unity and territorial integrity of the state. And if found guilty, they will face life sentences without parole. The blatantly political trial has been going on for over 2.5 years in a constant litany of dodgy practices that will convince no one except those who want to be convinced. The Kobani case charges are also at the centre of a separate case that calls for the HDP to be closed down, hence the need for the change of name, and for 451 people to be banned from party politics for 5 years. The European Court of Human Rights has already ruled that the charges are baseless and politically motivated, and that Dermatash and Yüksekdağ, who have been in prison since November 2016, should be released immediately. Turkey, as a member of the Council of Europe, is required to treat the European Court as the highest authority, but they don't, and the Council of Europe is yet to make use of its powers to sanction Turkish participation in the international institution. Dermatash began by dedicating his defence to his father. He had missed his father's funeral, explaining that he would not make a request to the government, but would mourn in prison. He had posted on Twitter, "Don't worry, Father, our hearts are bigger than this cell. I kiss your calloused labourers' hands 1,000 times. May your place be in heaven." Dermatash's defence speech called out Turkish colonialism many times. He told the Turkish state, represented by the state prosecutor, "You stole my country. You stole my homeland. I can't even say the name of my country. You can't say Kurdistan. If you do, they declare you a terrorist." noting the need for proper understanding and for action founded on that understanding, and that Kurds are mentioned in Turkish histories only to denigrate them, he supported his argument with a history of Kurdish prosecution and resistance. This has galvanized the Kurds, but his aim is also to explain this history to the majority Turkish population. Dermitaş showed how the Turkish state has consistently reneged on their Lausanne Treaty promise to act for both Turks and Kurds. He pointed out that it was not the Kurds who have occupied others' land, deposed state administrations, and removed signs because of their language, and Kurds have not said Turkish cannot be spoken here. But they, Turkey, banned Kurdish. They banned the thousands of years old colours of the Kurds. Addressing the prosecutor, he said, "Who are you? You are a colonialist. We are working on living together." When it comes to resisting this colonized condition, Dermitaş observed that, although Turkey is calling for resistance for Gaza day and night, no resistance is allowed for the Kurds, and it has even been deemed a crime for Kurds to sit in their own city squares. In fact, he noted that the thing that attracts the most attention of the prosecutor is resistance. Whenever I mentioned resistance, he underlined it. Even when we say we are resisting for peace, he probably did control F and underlined them all. In looking at more recent events, Dermitaş spoke at length about the period in 2015-16 when the Turkish army first besieged and then partially destroyed a dozen Kurdish cities and towns, including Cizre, Nusaybin, Şırnak, Salopi and Sur, in a violent act of collective punishment that received international condemnation. In showing an image of the destruction, he commented, "This is not Gaza, it is Cizre, a district of Şırnak." The cities had unilaterally declared autonomy, and young armed militants had tried to protect this by digging trenches to keep out the Turkish forces. Dermitaş described how HDP politicians had worked hard to defuse the situation, but the Turkish government destroyed the districts using 3 or 5 young people as an excuse. The government had seen this as an opportunity to go in with tanks and bulldozers and to set light to basements where people were taking shelter. Dermitaş noted that the commanders who carried out the operation were the same as were implicated in the coup attempt later that year, but that it was the HDP that were blamed for the destruction and labelled as terrorists. In his analysis, Dermitaş supported the view that the 2016 coup came as no surprise and was used by the state as a trap. He further argued that the Nationalist Movement Party, President Erdogan's far-right partners, are pulling the strings of both government and judiciary, and that the frequent employment of Islamic references is totally hypocritical. Dermitaş used his defence to explain the importance of Abdullah Öcalan's ideas of democratic autonomy in responding to local needs, especially in a country as varied as Turkey. He explains that defending the democratic autonomy model cannot be an activity of terrorism and separatism. It is simply another proposal for state structure, like the presidential model. And he is clear that Öcalan must be part of a peace process to end the 100-year Kurdish question, pointing out that peace is made with those with whom war is waged. Dermitaş argues that it is the actions of the Turkish state that force people such as his brother to join the PKK guerrillas to fight for Kurdish rights, observing, "The prosecutor who tried me sent who knows how many people to the mountains. These prosecutors helped the PKK. The prosecutor should be tried for aiding and abetting." Dermitaş is not afraid to appeal to Kurdish emotions, claiming that those who deny the history of the Kurdish nation are ashamed to look each other in the eye. Many times he referred to a graffiti message scrawled on the damaged walls of Cizre that read, "If you are a Turk, be proud. If you are not, obey." Responding for all Kurds, he stated, "I don't know if you are proud as Turks, but we as Kurds do not obey." The history of anti-Kurdish prejudice and oppression outlined by Dermitash spanned from the horror of state massacre to the insidious use of a lowercase k for Kurds in prosecution documents in order to afford a constant reminder that Kurds are not recognised as a people. Every week provides further examples of deeply embedded prejudices and of their deliberate reinforcement by politicians, and these last weeks are no exception. One of the historic figures who stood up against Turkish colonialism was Sheikh Said, who was killed by the Turkish state in 1925. Persecution of his granddaughter by a present-day Turkish judge caused such a public outcry that last Saturday the court was forced to cancel the ruling. Ruslan Firat was ostensibly punished for sharing pictures of Kurdish flags on social media 10 years before. The flags in question were those of the HDP and the Kurdistan region of Iraq, both of them legal in Turkey. However, the judge accused her of disloyalty to Turkey and compelled her to post a Turkish flag on social media every day for a month. Racist violence at top-rated Koch University has been brought to public attention by Halk TV. A student claims to have suffered repeated verbal and violent assaults from his two roommates who could not tolerate sharing their accommodation with an Alevi Kurd. After an attack with an art knife, he had to be treated in hospital. He had made audio recordings of their violent slurs, comments such as, "You are a lower race, you must be culled, you must accept that you are a slave, you have to obey, we don't want you in this room, and if you don't leave here, we will kill you." However, the university suspended the victim along with one of his attackers, and the other, who appears to have been the main instigator, was left unpunished. A lecturer at another university, who was found to be sharing hateful anti-Kurdish material on social media, was defended by her employer on the grounds of free speech. The post in question showed the funeral procession of the 34 Kurdish civilians killed by the state in the Roboski massacre 11 years ago. Tuba Ishik had added the comment, "The image is very beautiful. May it be permanent." A football game provided an uncomfortable reminder of the adulation afforded to Turkey's ethnic nationalist founder and, along with the television series, an example of the politicization of religion. Turkey's Super Cup final between the two dominant Istanbul teams, Galatasaray and Fenerbahce, was due to be played in Riyadh on Friday, the 29th of December. But when the Saudi Arabian authorities banned the teams from displaying images and sayings of Kemal Ataturk to commemorate the centenary of the Turkish Republic, they refused to play. The Saudi authorities cited international football regulations on the display of slogans. The clubs, with widespread public backing and support from the Republican People's Party, the CHP, stated that their overriding values were the Turkish nation and our great leader Mustafa Kemal Ataturk. And Turkey's President Erdogan claimed that the fiasco, with its insistence on Ataturk, was part of a wave of anti-Islamic hate targeting a sister country and a clear sabotage attempt against Turkey's interests. Ataturk presided over the evolution of the Republic's Turkish ethnic nationalism as well as its secularization, but it was disappointing to see people celebrating Saudi Arabia's exclusion of his images and words without considering the wider impact of banning all politics from football grounds. Would they have silenced Fenerbahce supporters when they voiced their criticism of Erdogan's disastrous response to February's earthquakes, or taken down St. Pauli's recent banners that read, "For the solution for the Kurdish question, freedom for Öcalan"? Kuzul Gonchala, Crimson Buds, is a television drama series that exposes the power of religious sects. It has been pulled off air for 3 weeks by the Board of Radio and Television in response to complaints from a powerful religious sect. A more personalised attack was directed at Başak Dermitaş, Selahattin Dermitaş's wife. The day after the funeral of her father-in-law, she was subjected to coordinated abuse on social media involving rape threats, which included fake accounts as well as real ones. Her lawyer has accused the judicial system of inaction, commenting, "There is serious institutional bias against Dermitaş and her family. The judiciary is quick to act against them while ignoring their rights." In Patmos prison, political prisoners due to be released have had their detention prolonged on the grounds that books found in the cells, which have been allowed in by the authorities, keep the consciousness of Kurdishness and Kurdistan alive. Turkey's politicized judicial system has created a constitutional crisis. For a second time, the Court of Cassation has refused to implement the decision of the Constitutional Court to release recently elected Turkish Workers' Party MP Can Atalay. While the Court of Cassation is Turkey's highest appeals court, the Constitutional Court is the ultimate authority for protecting human rights in the actions of all public bodies, which have to abide by its rulings. The Constitutional Court has been in the crosshairs of the government, who are not happy with some of its decisions. But the leader of the main opposition, Republican People's Party, Özgür Özel, has described the refusal to implement the Constitutional Court's decisions as an attempt to overthrow the constitutional order. He has called for an emergency parliamentary session on Tuesday and for people to join a public rally on Sunday, the 14th of January. The issue here concerns constitutional law, but the case against Atalay, who is one of the people accused of attempting to overthrow the government after taking part in the 2013 Gezi Park protests, is itself completely political and lacking in any criminal evidence. The protests began as a sit-in to prevent the development of one of Istanbul's last green spaces, and when that sit-in was violently cleared by the police, the protest widened in both scope and geography to become a vehicle for long-simmering discontent. Atalay was the lawyer for the Architects Association, which was contesting the development. In his defence speech, Dermitaş described the Gezi case as an attempt to silence Turks and the Kobani case as an attempt to silence Kurds, and he commented that, through Can Atalay, the government are giving the message that they will not comply with the decision of further human rights violations. I have focused on Turkey and have little space left, but will touch on some key events elsewhere in the region. HENGOR Organization for Human Rights has published their depressing statistics for Iran in 2023. They record that 823 prisoners were executed by the state, of whom 31 were accused of political or religious activities. 179 of those executed were Baluch and 151 were Kurds. At least 34 more people lost their lives in prison. HENGOR have identified 2,342 people who were arrested or forcibly disappeared, of whom 42% are Kurds and 26% Baluch, and 214 individuals were under 18. They've also recorded especially high casualties among the Kolbars, porters forced by poverty to eke a living carrying heavy loads over the mountainous border. Last year, 41 died and at least 292 were injured, with 27 deaths and 259 injuries due to live fire by the Iranian armed forces, and the rest from mines and natural hazards. In the unedifying power struggle that is Iraqi politics, elections for the Kurdistan Regional Parliament, due in 2022, have been postponed once again, with election rules still not agreed on. Meanwhile, the region has been left without a legislative body. in the contested province of Kirkuk, while local elections were held nearly 3 weeks ago, the Arab bloc is seeking to form a coalition administration with the Kurdistan Democratic Party, the KDP, and the Turkmen Front, excluding the Patriotic Union of Kurdistan, the PUK. And all the time, cross-border attacks and assassinations increase the risk of a wider conflagration across the region. Iran-backed militias in Iraq have continued to target US bases, hitting Iraq and northern East Syria on Tuesday, and northern East Syria again on Wednesday. On Thursday, America carried out their sixth retaliatory strike, a drone attack that killed a senior militia leader and his associate in Baghdad. These militias are part of Iraq's popular mobilization units, which are formerly part of the Iraqi security forces, and the assassinations raised the ire of the Iraqi Prime Minister, Mohammed Shia al-Sudani. Yesterday, al-Sudani's office stated that his government is setting the date for the start of the bilateral committee to put arrangements to end the presence of the international coalition forces in Iraq permanently. Israel assassinated senior Hamas commander Saleh al-Aruri in Beirut on Tuesday. And next day in Iran, nearly 100 people were killed in a double suicide bomb attack claimed by ISIS that targeted the commemoration of the death of Qasem Soleimani, himself assassinated by America 4 years ago. 2024 has got off to a very dangerous start. Today, along with many others, I am marching through Paris to demand justice for the three Kurdish women activists murdered in the city 11 years ago. While it is generally accepted that this was the work of Turkey's National Intelligence Organization, the French authorities refused to release key documents that would allow the case to be resolved. The widespread interest and public sympathy that followed the three further murders last year has petered out without being able to move those with the power to make a change. But they should know that the Kurds will never give up.